Hello and welcome to Crosslink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski, your host of the only radio program podcast that looks at health from the eye teeth on down and integrates oral health with systemic health. So today we are going to be spending some time on some research and some more research. And I'm going to start with my experience cleaning teeth the other day. The last couple of weeks, I've been spending more time chairside, and it's been kind of interesting. I put a little thing up on Facebook the other day about what my experience has been, looking at a health history and then looking at the patient's dental history, and they just absolutely don't match. For instance, yesterday I had a patient who had one prescription for restless leg, which, you know, was written off on the side. She had, what did she have on there? I mean, it was like nothing that you would even think would be interfering with her oral health. You'd think she just had, you know, good teeth and everything was fine. So then I look in the computer and I look at her, you know, tooth chart on the computer. She's missing three teeth on the lower left. She has periodontal treatment that was completed that she hasn't been very much keeping up on. And she has new areas of decay. She has fillings in almost all of her teeth. Her birth date is 1963 or something like that. So she's not old, but she's not young either. And there was just such a mismatch between what I usually see in a health history for a person that has so much dental drama. I look at that and I think to myself, why is there so much drama here? What is this lady's problem? There's something missing. I looked, no, she doesn't have snoring listed. I looked to see if there were other, you know, things happening in there. And when I bring her back, the first thing she tells me is that the last thing that happened, the last time she had been there, she had to go directly to the clinic because her blood pressure was off the charts high, and that they made her call her clinic from the office before they even let her go. So, all right. So now I'm looking at her. She's, you know, she's not overweight. She doesn't look horrible. And I'm wondering, okay, why is her blood pressure off the charts? So then I said, because that wasn't even listed on her health history, right? And so I said, okay, now I'm starting to put some things together. And this is my first tip off always for sleep apnea. So I asked how her sleep is, and she started to tell me about how she doesn't sleep very good, and she thinks she snores, but she wakes herself up from snoring, but she's not real sure how much she snores because her husband snores over her snoring. And so after a couple of more questions, I'm getting a better and better picture of the airway. Thyroid, that was on her health history. You wouldn't put thyroid together with restless leg and high blood pressure. You just wouldn't do that until you really learn about what is going on with the airway. So I lean her back, and sure enough, you know, she's got all this dentistry. Her tongue has no tone. So although she doesn't have a tongue tie, and she doesn't have any problem moving her tongue back and forth, there's just a lot of undertongue there. And that's squishing out in between her, in that space where those three teeth are missing. They're teeth in a row. I also noticed on her full mouth series of x-rays that she had what we call mandibular torus, which is a bony growth that grows on the inside of the mandible under the tongue, which no one has put together with anything. And, you know, I've always resisted the idea that that came from clenching and grinding. And I've since, in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, just totally pitched that. If you have those bony growths, you are clenching and grinding. When I did the oral cancer screening, I was feeling around on her maxilla, And I noticed that she also has a bony growth on the outside of the maxilla in her mouth. And that's called exostosis, which is also attributable to grinding. And grinding is attributable to sleep-disordered breathing because your body is trying to wake you up in the night because it's afraid that you're going to die of suffocation. That's also a reason why legs get twitchy in the night. So now we've got an airway issue that's primary, that's interfering with thyroid function, that's interfering with blood pressure, which she's now on blood pressure medications and her blood pressure is under control. She also has grinding symptoms with the bony growth. She also relayed to me that sometimes, you know, the sleeping problem. And so just by looking at the health history and a picture of her teeth and her x-rays, I was already alerted to a problem. Now, without this extra training that I've had, I don't know that I would have just put her on xylitol and just didn't know what to do. And that's what was so frustrating for me in the past, where I would see these patients with new areas decay, this crash and burn situation of their teeth, and nothing to match it to. She also told me that she had purchased a water pick and she has a power brush and she just lost interest and she just doesn't want to mess around. And I thought, well, there's another sleep disordered breathing problem. So, you know, it was just kept on going on and on and on, none of which was on her health history, other than to say that it was alarming that there was nothing on her health history that you would normally correlate with her oral health picture. So she is going to see the airway dentist in our practice. And I hope that she follows through with treatment because she's still young. She's got another 30 or 40 years to be on the planet. And there's no reason why she should have to continually kind of go down and down and down. The same thing happened last week when I was at the office. I looked at a health history that did not match the oral condition of a patient, and she too had a severe airway problem. And, you know, if you don't write this down or talk about it right away, you just kind of, you miss little pieces here and there and how that whole thing went together. But she too, you know, I was asking her questions, started with sleep questions, went into airway questions, and I looked at her tongue, same kind of thing with this big puffy tongue underneath. She had low tone of her tongue, and even though she could move it around, it was not behaving correctly, and it was filling her airway. So she too will be seeking the advice of an airway specialist. So that's number one on the list here. It's still really uncomfortable for me, even though my practice is not in competition with that practice. I feel real funny about having patients come to my office or recommending that they see me in my office. Maybe there's a way to do that, and I just don't know how to do that. And I don't know. I'll get better at it somewhere. But that was my big aha moments. I guess I never thought my way through that process that was happening in my head and what to call it, and really calling it a mismatch between the two pieces of evidence that we have before the patient gets into the chair really should help divert the conversations to go to another direction. I know dental hygienists have been hammered with this idea of periocharting and doing periodontal therapy and all this stuff. All of that is worthless in the eyes of this airway problem. And that kind of brings me to a discussion about periodontal disease and some of the newer sciences that I'm stumbling across as we learn more and more about periodontal disease and the treatment of periodontal disease and how we need to kind of address this problem from the inside out, not just from the outside and then just call it a day. It is not a disease of not enough brushing or not enough flossing. So that's a piece that dental hygienist is struggling with at this point. most dental hygienists have at least an introduction to nutrition. A lot of dental hygienists really look into nutrition and they know quite a bit about it. And then there are those that are really just, I don't know, what I used to call chat and polish. Somebody reminded me of that term the other day, where they'll talk and talk and talk about your vacation and they'll, you know, clean your teeth. And you don't really know anything more about your oral health at all, but you do know what they did on vacation and what did they do this last holiday weekend. So here is a study that was released in the Journal of Periodontal Research this month in June of 2016, looking at the biochemical effects of an over-the-counter medication, which consisted of a single tuft brush containing acetylpyridium chloride, which is the active ingredient in chloraseptic mouthwash, and putting it or embedding it into a brush and matching that to a licorice root extract. And let's see, allantoin is a which is from garlic. So they've taken a reductionist situation here and applied a couple of different things to a toothbrush, to a single tuft brush. It was a randomized controlled double-blind study with 61 subjects. The over-the-counter medication was self-applied twice a day for 12 weeks to two molars with pocket readings of up to 6 millimeters. And they did a decent job, it seems, looking at biomarkers for periodontal infections. They looked at cytokines and chemokines in the, looks like in the crevicular fluid. So for those of you not in the know, crevicular fluid is a little fluid that comes out into that little moat around your teeth where the gums are. So that's where they got these measurements from. It was not from a blood test, which is perfectly fine. So what they found, though, what they found then is that the levels remained significantly lower in the test group compared to the placebo group. In the placebo group, when the probing pocket depth was 4 millimeters, some of those markers increased, particularly in the second molar tooth, and the greatest increase was seen when the baseline was at 5 or 6 millimeters. In the test group, those indicators went down, so that was awesome. It doesn't call out each of the groups separately, so they just concluded that the over-the-counter medication is biochemically effective for steady chronic periodontitis and supportive periodontal therapy phase. So this may be something that you can do yourself. You can easily find licorice root as a powder at a health food store. You can take an interdental cleaning applicator and dip it into that powder, wet it and dip it in the powder and put it between your teeth yourself and lower those inflammatory markers at that site. The problem, obviously, is that we don't know system-wide how that's going to look. And anything you do surface-wide is awesome. But if you're sick internally or if you're out of balance or maybe out of homeostasis or striving or working really hard at achieving homeostasis, you will have even a better result. So applying things topically is still where most of the research is being done. Until we look at vitamin D. And vitamin D has also been capturing my attention. I've been writing a fair amount about it. Most importantly is that I came across a study a few months ago that reported an increase in vitamin D supplementation in children in a northern climate and the decay rate going down during the winter when they were supplemented with vitamin D. I cannot find that study again. I know I found it in PubMed. I've looked at every keyword that I could possibly look at, and I am just having a real bear of a time finding it again. And I'd like to use that study. I probably saved it somewhere real important, and it's gone. So if you can help me out with that, I would be eternally grateful. So this study here looked at vitamin D inhibits the growth and virulence factor of gene expression by one of the key bacteria, Porphyromonas gingivalis, in periodontal infections. So they're saying here in their opening statement, increasing evidence suggests that vitamin D3, a fat-soluble secosteroid hormone, has a positive impact on periodontal health through diverse mechanisms. Yes, diverse mechanisms. If you're talking about homeostasis, you can't talk about equilibrium because there are workarounds in order for your body to achieve a level of homeostasis. So there's a lot of fail-safes in the human body. For instance, nasal breathing can be supplemented or replaced by mouth breathing. That does not make you healthy at all. It interferes with health, actually, but at least you get air. So this is an important statement here that has a positive impact on periodontal health through diverse mechanisms. The present study was aimed at investigating the effect of vitamin D3 on the growth of and virulence factor gene expression of that periodontal pathogenic bacterium. And they found that vitamin D3 selectively inhibits the growth of and virulence factor gene expression by P. gingivalis, in addition to attenuating necrosis factor activation by that germ. The dual action on P. gingivalis and the inflammatory response of host cells may be of particular interest with a view to developing a novel and inexpensive preventive therapeutic strategy. So dental hygienists that are treating patients with periodontal infections, all of your patients should be supplementing with vitamin D, vitamin D3 in particular, as according to this study, and turmeric or curcumin with pepperine. That's increasingly important. Now, a lot of your patients are taking medications in order to survive based on other health markers. But until medicine starts to really look at periodontal disease as a contributing factor to other conditions and this airway situation that I illustrated a few minutes ago really needs to have more attention to it. And if we can supplement from our end anti-inflammatories and supplements that will help healing or reducing the virulence factor of certain bacteria, we are really helping the patient be healthier and achieve homeostasis without end rounds, without going that extra weirdo way. So let's see. Smoking. Smoking is still a problem. We've almost gotten rid of smoking. You can only smoke in your own home anymore. And most people even don't do that. They'll smoke out on their patio or their deck because you can't sell a house from a smoker. People won't buy a smelly house. You'd have to paint all the walls, wash all the carpets, and still reduce the price of your home. So most people understand that and they will go outside to smoke. This study here, the effect of smoking cessation for 1 year on periodontal markers. So this is a health study to see that smoking will benefit periodontal infections. The aim of this 12-month prospective study was to assess the effect of smoking cessation, that means quitting smoking, on periodontal tissue without any other intervention. So their measurements were the MMP-8 and MMP-9 and interleukin 1 beta in gingival crevicular fluid, nicotine, and cotinine in saliva. And so they enlisted 122 male smokers. They got 11 quitters and nine non-quitters, 6 oscillators, and 13 non-smokers. Probably the control participated in the experiments. They had a follow-up week 2, a follow-up month 2, 4, 6, and 12. and they measured using that, the gingival crevicular fluid, those markers. They also measured the gingival index, the plaque, dental plaque index. And they, how do I want to say this? Made note of periodontal pockets of 3.5 millimeters or more, and between 3.5 to 5.5 millimeters using the WHO probe. And then some other measurements, measuring the nicotine and stuff like that. And so what they found after a year is, even though they didn't do traditional non-surgical periodontal therapy, that all of those markers improved. All the patient had to do was quit smoking, which of course is an oxymoron. It is not easy to quit smoking. It is easier to quit, you know, hard drugs like heroin. You'll when you talk to previous heroin users or people who are hooked on heroin, they're still smoking. So that's important information. We should always encourage our patients to find a way to quit smoking, and that will improve their periodontal health status as well. So inflammatory response influences treatment of localized aggressive periodontitis. This was also from 2016, this month. Wow, I got a lot of real early ones here. I'm right on the cutting edge. Woohoo! In the Journal of Dental Research. And let's see. We recently reported a systemic hyperinflammatory response to bacterial lipopolysaccharide in children with localized aggressive periodontitis. So to translate that for us non-dental hygienists, previous reports show that there's an inflammatory response that's overdone in response to the toxins created from the cell walls of bacteria. So all cell walls have a lipopolysaccharide coating, or the cell wall is made up of this lipopolysaccharide. And I'll break that down. Lipo is fat, and polysaccharide is multi-sugar. So it's a combination of the sugar and the fat together. And once that breaks down, these certain people have a huge reaction to it. And the tooth just wants to get out. The body wants the tooth to disappear to get rid of those bacterial components. And that's part of the problem with periodontal disease. So let's see here. So what the study showed was that it's true, they do have an overabundance of reaction to that condition. So it's real important to get rid of those periodontal pathogens. And one way to do that is to brush and floss the teeth. But at a certain point, brushing and flossing just won't work anymore. And looking at some other helpful ways to reduce the biofilm and to support the reduction of that biofilm from the inside out is really, really important. So using things like the vitamin D3 that we just talked about, and the topical applications of the licorice root extracts and ingesting licorice root extracts. Licorice root extract suckers are available. And so are licorice extract teas. That's another good one. Some other anti-inflammatory supplements, or making sure the diet has some fat so that all of those fat-soluble vitamins can work. So even vitamin A, I'm sure they're going to be starting to look at vitamin A the same way that they're looking at vitamin D, is another fat-soluble vitamin. And vitamin E showed up somewhere recently also as an indicator for, So periodontal disease is an indicator of a vitamin E deficiency, or that vitamin E isn't working right. So, you know, all of these things are intertwined, and there are some people that are still waiting or still making comments about causation and versus correlation. And I'm like, who gives a rip? It's still, they affect one another. And until you get all of a bunch of different pieces working together, you're not doing anybody any service. So that's the upshot here, that we're working with homeostasis. We're not working with a teeter-totter. We're not working with an equilibrium. We're working with something that's much more complex than an equilibrium. That's one of the reasons why I'm finding more reasons why I like my business name so much. I know that sounds really crazy, but you know, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what to call my business, and calling it Primal Air turns out to be even more important than, or more descriptive than, just working with the airway and doing myofunctional therapy. Ozone therapy is also extremely helpful in helping your body reset to the appropriate level of homeostasis, where all the pieces are working correctly and that there are no workarounds, because you're providing the body with hyperoxygenation. Not that you're inhaling it, but you are using that hyperoxygenated oil or gas to heal the body, because it needs a little bit of help. The other thing is HBO therapy, hyperbaric oxygen. You know, it's expensive, it's time consuming, but it's a really important way to drive oxygen into the cells from the outside in. Now, there are ways to do that using ozone. I'm not prepared to do that. I don't know who is. I'm probably going to look for that at some point. But to what they're doing in parts of the country, not just parts of the world, parts of the United States, is they are drawing out a certain amount of blood. They're gassing that blood with ozone gas, and then they're reintroducing that oxygenated blood, that hyperoxygenated blood, back into the body, and then that hyperoxygenation really can let loose. Now, you put that together with the Buteyko breathing, where you're having a higher tolerance for carbon dioxide, then that releases the oxygen easier and faster. So it's a really cool system. And by doing this reductionist approach, where you're dissecting everything and just taking out the pieces that are the most active, really don't work. You need to have all of the pieces together in order for the human body to work. I was talking to somebody just this morning about fats in the diet, and she too never really put all those pieces together, that we've been on this crazy fat-free system for decades, and we're seeing the results of that in people in severe pain, fibromyalgia, all these dementia kind of problems that all affect the coding of the nervous system. The entire brain is made up of cholesterol, and all that cholesterol is impeding these firings from one nerve to another, so that it only fires at a particular place. And once that starts to break down, it's really, really, really hard to build back up again. So using a reductionist system where we're taking out one food or another is just not helpful. And what we've done with the complete diet has been really not helpful for most people. We have a much, much higher incidence of obesity. We have a much higher incidence of neurological disorders, diabetes, yada, yada, all these things, because we've been given the wrong advice with that. Is there an answer to the food problem? Yes. And I've discussed that at length in the past. So I hope everybody's okay with that. We covered quite a bit of territory here today. I appreciate you sharing these episodes with your friends. And we'll continue bringing this kind of information to you so that you can live in homeostasis as well. Have a great rest of the day. This is Shirley Gutkowski signing off for Crosslink Radio.